Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. Hope everybody had a fantastic Memorial Day weekend and everybody is safe and healthy. We had some socially distanced hangouts with friends over this past weekend. And we also had taken advantage of some of the nice restaurants in Chicago who are doing special like takeout meal combos. This time around was Girl and the Goat. They did an entire weekend. So it was supposed to be two brunches and two dinners. Ended up being enough food that you could split across 3 or 4 days. And the food was phenomenal. And it came with videos and instructions. Nothing took more than 20 minutes to prepare and cook. Most of it was focused around the grill when it came for the proteins in the meal. And it was unbelievable. Highly recommend it. They're doing different stuff every week. It's affordable, way cheaper than it would be to sit down at the restaurant. Overall, it was just a fantastic experience. Cannot recommend that enough. And in other news, on the hair and beard front, considering I've decided not to cut it or trim the beard until there is a vaccine available in this COVID-19 pandemic, I'm really starting to resemble Robin Williams when he comes back from being stuck in the Jumanji game. So if you don't know what I'm referring to, go ahead and Google that. It's not pretty, and neither is what's happening here. And I thought we'd kick off the podcast with a Grinds My Gear segment, just come right out hard-hitting after a long holiday weekend. I'm going to set my focus here on Wink. I'm not sure how many of you might be familiar with Wink. It's like a home security monitoring smart home type service. I bought it a few years back for my home because they had a very simple claim. It was that they would not be a subscription service. So in essence, I had all these sensors using a Wink Hub connected to the doors and the windows. You could do it for lighting and all kinds of other smart home automation. Now, I had just largely used it to monitor the home when we're not here, but Wink decided out of nowhere a couple weeks back to just send an email out to everyone that is using a Wink account and say that unfortunately, or fortunately for them, I suppose, they've decided to charge a subscription going forward. And they gave a 7-day lead time at that point in time to pay the subscription. I think it was like $6 a month. Now, one, real interesting time to do that, given everything that's going on in the world today. Not exactly a great time to just spring that on people. It causes a massive uproar, and it has caused a massive uproar. The company that bought Wink, who's driving all of this, is led by Will.i.am, a musician. And yeah, so what I did was quickly swap out my Wink Hub for a Samsung SmartThings Hub, and all the devices work with it just fine, and I no longer am being held hostage by Wink to pay a subscription to get access to the devices that I paid for. So if any of you are in that same boat and you've been debating whether or not you want to pay for the subscription, which by the way, Wink continues to push back because I don't think that they really thought this through and thought through what the reaction would be and how people would respond to it. So there's, I believe, yet another week extension until they start charging for that subscription. But I think overall, if you're using Wink and you didn't want to pay for the subscription, Samsung SmartThings has a hub that you can buy that works with all Z-Wave devices and a ton of other stuff. And honestly, the app is pretty nice. Takes some getting used to if you're used to the Wink app. It's just designed differently, but overall works exactly the same way. There are some tricks, though, so if you are switching out your Wink Hub for one of the SmartThings hubs, feel free to reach out to me. I'll tell you what tricks to use to make sure you can port that over quickly, because there are some things that you have to do to get the devices to repair correctly with the Samsung device. So switching topics, I had a neater send me a tweet that I got a big kick out of last night, and it's, and I quote, "Wanted, McKinsey, but for helping companies undo or reverse whatever McKinsey recommended over the past 30 years, will fund." And
This is something that we've run into and that I've run into over my career thus far quite a bit, particularly when it comes to digital transformation or really any other buzzword that has come up in the industry where a bunch of fancy suits from these larger consulting firms can come in and do a 6 to 12 month project to basically deliver a document to tell you what you should have been doing 6 to 12 months ago. And a lot of times these recommendations are not great, but because they've built these brands, and I have respect for them and the fact that they've built these massive companies and these massive brands and have built this reputation of being firms that you should go talk to about some of the cutting edge things. Fact of the matter is, when it comes to digital, when it comes to data, so on and so forth, a lot of times you're better off with the more niche companies simply because they're spending more time hands-on with a lot of these solutions or the organizations like yourself that are dealing with the same struggles you're trying to overcome. And we talk quite a bit about biases too and needing to be aware of biases in the archives here on Analytics Neat. And I think this is a true statement here as well. You have to remember that these large firms build large partnerships, and as a result, a lot of their recommendations sometimes will be towards partnerships that benefit them as well. And at this point, I don't think you really need to do a strategy project for an 8 to 12 month type scenario, or even a 4 month scenario to tell you what to do with data. There is a ton of free articles out there that talk through all of the thought leadership, the challenges and the things that you need to think about as a business if you're trying to transform yourself from a digital transformation perspective. Or heck, you know, give Analytics Neat a listen instead and just run with whatever I'm talking about. But I guess what it boils down to for me is if you're going to go through one of these big projects where you're going to have a bunch of stakeholders across your business interviewed and you're going to have all your processes reviewed and so on and so forth, because you think that you're a unique organization, and I used to hear that all the time, right? Our organization is extremely unique. We have very unique requirements. We have very unique challenges. At this point, that's not true. Every organization, at least one, has run into the same challenges as you. And oh, by the way, all of your competitors or all the people swimming in the same fishbowl that you're in are doing the same exact thing or trying to achieve the same exact success. And they're just trying to do it quicker than you. And the way to do it quicker is to not waste months and months to do some sort of strategy project when you probably already know the answers. Most times I found that these large strategy projects, when you bring in one of the big four as an example, were really just politically motivated because no one's listening to you in the organization. And in that situation, you're really just paying to have somebody else's logo stamped on something that you've been saying probably for the past year and a half of being in that role. And I think that's the problem a lot of organizations run into. And that's the reason why you see a lot of people very unhappy with the output of these types of projects as well. So switching gears, the advertising world had some additional news this past week. New York Times decided to announce that they will no longer use third-party data to target ads come 2021. So they're building out, apparently, their own proprietary first-party data platform. So starting in July, so right around the corner, they're going to start offering clients of theirs 45 new proprietary first-party audience segments to target ads. They'll be broken up into 6 categories, things like range, income, the business they're in, and demographic information, so on and so forth. By the second half of the year, the Times plans to introduce another 30 more interest segments. So they've invested significantly in building out a proprietary targeting solution. This from a publisher perspective, right? They're trying to sell ads to organizations. They no longer want to rely on third-party data because it's going away. So they're making a big move. And I think it's going to be stories like this that start to get brands to think differently about how they buy paid media and advertising. This is something that, you know, at this point, if you're using third-party data, it's going to be so old, so out of date, and so lookalike modeled to death that you can't even really trust whether or not it's realistic. And the organizations that I'm talking to on a daily basis are realizing that the most powerful data set that they have or could have is their own. It's first-party information about unknown visitors or consumers who might be interested in their brand. It's building profiles and personas based upon the types of customers that they have, regardless of the vertical that they're in. And this is overall, I think, going to be a big shift for publishers. You know, the Times is sitting there saying, we have all this subscriber base. We know a lot about individuals. We've captured a lot of information, and we can use that in a way to build a proprietary first-party data platform. And it's, I think, important. And I think what we're going to see next is other publishers looking to do the same thing. I personally, without divulging too many details, have been in several conversations with organizations looking to do just that. You know, everybody's sick of it. And you're not going to be able to wait for the industry to come up with a solution. The industry is not going to solve this problem. Individual brands, individual publishers, that's how they're going to solve this problem. And those that build the best market for advertising that generate results are going to be the ones that win here. And it's going to be the ones that are, from a measurement perspective, doing it right, giving you enough data to where you can be dangerous and you can actually understand what's working and what isn't. Because most organizations that have been doing and relying on third-party ads and doing ad targeting have not been analyzing digital effectively anyways and aren't realizing how much money is being lost. And that's just from a performance standpoint, let alone the money that goes into the sausage machine to make the sausage in the first place. And the final topic on this week's undercard is that Facebook has launched a free feature called Facebook Shops. And it's a feature designed, again, you guessed it, to sell more advertising. So Zuckerberg announced it. It's a new e-commerce feature, so businesses can easily list their products on Facebook and Instagram, all in one place, all seamless, designed towards small businesses, right? They can list it on their Facebook page, their Instagram profile. They can put it in stories. They can put it in ads, so on and so forth. And they'll eventually, in the future, allow businesses to sell through WhatsApp, Messenger, Instagram Direct, and they'll be able to even tag products during their live streams. So it sounds to me like a lot of the stuff that's coming forth are really the things that have been reserved for the blue check mark or for businesses or for influencers to be able to do, and some of the features there based upon the number of followers that you have. But now Facebook is saying that's not enough. We need to generate more ad revenue and we need to help small businesses. So it's altruistic in a sense that they're trying to help small businesses find revenue streams. That's absolutely true. But at least they are also straightforward, and Mark Zuckerberg has made the statement of, obviously we're doing this to sell more advertising. So hopefully that those businesses that use this feature, as an example, realize that they're getting a decent amount of money from it, and as a result, choose to then advertise with us to try to drive more revenue and make more money. But an interesting feature overall, because it was very fragmented and in many ways, I think, was restrictive to small businesses in the past. But it's yet another e-commerce channel that comes to the forefront that organizations are going to need to measure. And I have a lot of questions around what that measurement's going to look like, how much data organizations will have access to be able to analyze the effectiveness of this, and you know what that complete picture will look like. Because you typically, when you're trying to analyze the effectiveness of social media, it's murky because of the walled garden issue, because of the privacy concerns, so on and so forth. So I think that piece is still to be determined, and something I want to keep an eye on and probably will revisit here on Analytics Neat, because I'll probably try to use it for my small sort of woodworking business that I'm doing on the side. Gatorbill Furnishings, free plug. And that wraps up the undercard, so let's jump into this week's main event. I want to talk about the citizen data scientist. I'm curious if you guys are familiar with that term, or if you've conversed about that term in your organizations, or if you're a consultant, you know, is that something that you recommended? This has come up quite a bit lately for me, even more so with the launch of Celebrus version 9.2 last week and the various artificial intelligence and machine learning features that are built and embedded within that product. And the next logical question when we demo that and after the launch was, who can use it? And we've already talked in the past week about how models these days are not performing well because of the pandemic and some of the anomalies, and how human intervention is needed, and that human intervention is important anyways from an oversight perspective for any artificial intelligence or machine learning perspective, whether it's technology driven or whether it's data science and modelers that are building it out in the first place. So if you haven't listened to that, I recommend you jump back to last week's episode in the archives. But in speaking with some industry analysts this past week doing briefings on Celebrus 9.2, this was a question that I was asked every single time. Do you think that citizen data scientists can use it? Is that important? And where do you see that fitting in the mix? I think it's important for those of you that might not be familiar to give you a definition of a citizen data science. So Gartner outlines this as a person who creates or generates models that use advanced diagnostic analytics or predictive and prescriptive capabilities, but whose primary job function is outside the field of statistics and analytics. they sort of view citizen data scientists, I mean, just based on that definition alone, it's people that are not, you know, mathematical backgrounds in most situations, but instead become power users of technology, right? Who can use some of the embedded capabilities within that technology to do things that were historically reserved for data scientists, modelers, statisticians, so on and so forth. Now, a key point that I think Gartner raises in this very long, wordy definition is that they don't replace the experts because they don't have the specific expertise to do so, but that they bring several traits. So what are some of those traits? They have a contextualized vision of the organization, according to Gartner. They have a proven application of analytic techniques to business problems, whatever that means. They have an appetite, which is good. Everybody's got an appetite, but theirs apparently is for what matters relative to the business priorities. They've been around the block and have connections. They're involved hands-on in multiple analytic areas. They have a unique perspective of individual business area. So in a lot of ways, it's a business consultant being rebranded as a scientist. From my perspective, I think the thought process is pretty easy to draw the line here, is that a citizen data scientist, right, is someone that is cheaper than the data scientists themselves, who are highly in demand and highly expensive in today's marketplace. And, you know, technology has evolved to make it easier to use very advanced features that historically would be done on someone's laptop or desktop or on a server somewhere with data modelers and data scientists. Now here's my thought. If you don't have a statistical or mathematical background, you're not a data scientist. Shouldn't even be in the title. I think you do need both roles, but only if you can. But if you can only afford one, then I'd highly recommend you go with a data scientist. It's going to take you a lot further, and you're going to be able to do a heck of a lot more outside of the data environment of the technology. I think a problem you run into with most technologies that claim to have artificial intelligence and machine learning capabilities is that they're very limited in the data set. Now, while that's not the case with Celebrus and how we see the world, the Adobes and other platforms of the world that do claim to do machine learning are just doing simple pivots based on data that they're capturing that, you know, is not really science. It's an if-then type statement. And in those situations, sure, you can absolutely do it. I think digital analysts, in many ways, need to evolve closer to data science. And I think that this title and this role is trying to encapsulate the fact that digital analysts need to skill up without just coming out and saying that digital analysts are evolving or need to evolve, or you need to look for a different profile of an individual. And I think that's a lot of the reason behind creating this role. I think technology definitely makes things easier, but the problem with people who stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night and are starting to try to do data science is that if you do it wrong or you misinterpret things, then it can be quite costly very quickly. I'd be interested what your thoughts are on this role. Do you see a place for it? Do you think that it's just the new role of a digital analyst? And again, you know, I think that technology is doing a lot of amazing things to enable power users to do things that historically would have to be done somewhere else or outside of that technology platform. So there's definitely a place for it. But I think to call them a data scientist is a bit too broad and not really what this individual is. And I honestly think that if you've got somebody running rogue with a technology platform making decisions that traditionally would be mathematical based or at least confirmed by a human, then you're putting yourself at risk. And I think at this point, you need to pair them together. You need to have somebody with that business acumen. You know, when you go through the traits that I listed that Gartner has put out there, you're really talking about a business consultant. And it's always important to pair somebody from the business side with somebody from the technical side, because that's a heck of a 1-2 punch. But with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this week's episode of Analytics Neat. Really appreciate you listening. We'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on this episode. Topic ideas, questions, concerns, come directly to me at Bill Bruno using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat or at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter. Again, you can subscribe to the podcast on any platform. So if you happen to be listening right now on BillBruno.com, while it's always posted there because I have to do it, it's available on all podcast platforms as well. So feel free, if you are subscribed, to leave a review, maybe a 5-star rating. That'll help. And we'll talk to you guys all next week. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your week.